Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Matt Katz, in for Tanzina Vega. On Wednesday, Des Moines Register reporter Andrea Sahori was acquitted of all charges following her arrest at last summer's protests for racial justice.
Immediately, I see this officer coming at me, and I put up my hands and say, I'm press. He grabbed me, pepper sprayed me, and as he was doing so, said, that's not what I asked.
That was the Iowa journalist testifying at her trial on Tuesday, where she was being charged with failure to disperse and interference with official acts. Sahori was just one of several journalists who were facing charges connected to last summer's protests, which saw an unprecedented number of journalists arrested or detained for doing their jobs. Here to walk us through all of that is Kirsten McCudden, managing editor of the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker. Kirsten, thanks for joining us.
Matt, thanks for having me on to talk about this.
Yeah, it's so important and very interesting case. Andrea Sahori was acquitted by jury in Iowa just yesterday. Why does this matter for both journalists and also the public?
It's a great question, Matt. A lot of eyes have been on Ms. Sahori's case because it's rare for a journalist to face trial. At the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker, we document these things. And the last journalist we had going to trial was in 2018. So last summer, we saw, as you said, an unprecedented amount of journalists arrested or detained while covering Black Lives Matter protests, social justice protests all across the U.S., nearly 130, which, let's just put that in a little bit of context. In 2019, the tracker documented 9 journalists arrested or detained. So 2020, more than 125. But of those, most of the time, the journalist is released or the charges are dropped. In Ms. Sahori's case, it went all the way to trial. The charges of failure to disperse and interference with official acts were never dropped. And in fact, they took her to trial. It was a 3-day trial. And as you said, it ended yesterday with an acquittal on both counts.
And what was the state arguing? What were they saying that Sahori did?
So failure to disperse, that there was a dispersal order and that she did not do that, and also that she interfered. So interference with official acts, that means in this case it was that she sort of resisted arrest when the officer was putting her into cuffs. So the prosecution argued that her role as a journalist didn't matter, that she didn't have a right to be there. The defense argued that the dispersal order wasn't clear where they were, and that as a journalist, she has a right to be there to document.
What do we know about attitudes about the press in Iowa? Was this a Iowa-specific situation? I mean, I've reported in Iowa that people were always quite kind, never had an issue. I'm wondering, though, if there was a certain distrust of journalists there, similar to what we saw from the Trump administration, that might have been at play.
The prosecution wasn't very forthcoming from the May 31st arrest through the end of the trial about why this case in particular, about why Ms. Sahori, they wanted to take her through trial. And they said, all we have is speculation because all that was said from the DA was it will come out in trial. And turns out the jury very quickly acquitted her on both counts.
Kirsten, Sahori is just one of several reporters that you mentioned that will be on trial this year. What are some of the other notable cases that we should be looking out for?
Well, we hope that nobody else goes to trial. There are about a dozen, actually, journalists who are still facing charges from covering protests last summer. So those 12 journalists, they're in the hearing stages. So right now there are no other trials set, but we know one good example is a freelance reporter. Richard Cummings is his name. And this week he also had a hearing. And originally he had 3 charges against him. 2 of those have been dropped, but the failure to disperse, again, the same one that you heard with Andrea Sahori's trial, failure to disperse has still not been dropped against Richard Cummings. In fact, at his March 8th hearing, they just pushed it to April 20th. So he was arrested June 1st, one day after Ms. Sahori, who was May 31st, still facing charges, not yet dropped, and he'll be waiting till April 20th to find out what happens with those. That's one case that we're following. But at the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker, we document all these cases and follow them through. So we'll follow them through until we know whether or not the charges have been dropped, or, as you said, they may go to trial.
You know, Kirsten, I'm trying to think of this from law enforcement's perspective for a moment. It just must be becoming harder and harder for police to distinguish in the fog of war during a protest, let's say, between who are journalists documenting protests and who are protesters documenting protests, right? I mean, everyone is filming. It's now like reporters with fedoras on the side with press cards and, you know, like it maybe used to be. There's a whole new range of news outlets. And then from my experience, there's this antiquated, uneven way that states and cities and police approve reporters for press credentials. And then some reporters don't even wear press credentials because they feel like they can be targeted by some protesters because of that. Are there better ways to identify press in such circumstances so real reporters documenting history are not locked up like this?
You know, that came up at the trial as well, that Andrea Sohori wasn't wearing visible press credentials. And it comes down to each newsroom and each journalist, how safe they feel wearing credentials while, as you said, in the fog of war, while documenting. We know that protests have traditionally been dangerous place for journalists. The old lantern around the neck that says press can't be used to yank somebody back. So it's really up to each newsroom, and like I said, each journalist to determine how safe they feel. Some of the recommendations are to have press pass or press credentials on you, but maybe not either taped to your body or a place where you can get to them. Those are some recommendations coming out of our partner network. And we saw it even through after the protest last summer, as we headed into November, the general election, very tense in America, that different newsrooms were talking with their journalists and saying, you know, this is how we want to prepare you. Some of them said, you know, we're taking riot gear. We have our journalists in helmets and protective vests. And then other outlets will say, well, we want you to show press. And others will say, I really don't feel safe. I'm going to have it on me, but undercover, just either coming from law enforcement or individuals just for safety. And also, as you said, journalism itself, I love the fedora, little feather, saying I'm press.
Right.
That has changed, and it's changed for the most part for the better. We have the ability to disseminate news wider and quicker, and that's not always recognized with the antiquated system of press passes.
Kirsten McCudden is the managing editor of the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker. We'll be following these stories. Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Matt.